Welcome to the Hot Ticket Podcast. On this episode, we break down the Winston Churchill The Late Hour by Davidoff Cigars. This is the first Davidoff cigar that has been featured on this podcast. So, as always, sit back, listen, and enjoy. Now, the best part. But you know what's weird is that this is the first time I've gotten bass thumb on both thumbs.
Really? Yeah. I always have it on my right because I always grip with my right one.
Yeah, and I just do, I guess I was doing both. Now that I'm looking at it, I guess I was like doing the old Bill Clinton thumbs. I think, well, you know what it was.
Dad refuses to hold them by their mouth.
I know, which is... such a...
I want to be connected with my fish.
That's such a Nancy thing to do.
Don't you want to be connected with your fish? You want to hold it?
Dude, I like grab mine by the face. Yeah, yeah. I don't know why he does that. I think it's because he has a bit of PTSD from that hook entering his hand.
I just remember there was a rock bass that was too small to really get in his mouth and to get the hook out. So I just gently caressed his fins all down his back, just like...
and then held him.
And then like held him, and he's like doing like the weird eye thing that they do because they're freaking out.
Yeah.
And then I just pulled it out. And then he was cool. That like eye strained me.
Yeah.
Did my eye go like where?
Nah,
where?
I can barely see through your lenses.
Okay.
Yeah, so the insane amount of rock bass that I caught.
Yeah.
So somewhere probably around 60 or 70.
I had to call it 30 or more. I caught a shit ton.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, those little fuckers are the ones because they flail so much.
Yeah, they do. Like, if you grab their mouth, they immediately shake.
Yeah. And I was like, that's just what happened with mine. And then I've got my wound climbing that fence, both sides of my hand. So my hands are a little tore up.
Oh, honey.
But... caught my personal best.
Yeah, you did. I should have caught my personal best.
I know.
And I want to shoot Dad.
Yeah, when he said, oh, I missed it with the net twice. I'm like, well, then that's your fault. Chris didn't not get it to the boat. You didn't get it in the boat.
Yeah.
The net man has an equal amount of responsibility once the fish is to the boat as the person who's reeling it in.
Definitively over 20 inches. Definitively a fucking football.
Yeah. That's really frustrating. I could tell that it was Dad's fault for not getting it. He's like, oh, when I try to net him, you dart back down. That's what they do. You have to anticipate
their
movement.
Well, you know what Dad
did, movement.
Which drove me crazy. He's like, just be patient with him. Let him wear himself out. Let him wear himself out. And I was like, no, net him.
Yeah. No, get him.
Like, if he's even slightly worn out, fucking net him.
Yeah. There's an art to netting, especially a smallmouth. There's, you do it enough. You've mastered the art. You've mastered the technique.
The swoop sideways and under?
You have to anticipate their movement.
Oh, you
because
do,
they dart,
dive.
They want to dart down.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You're like...
they're very elusive. Like, you have to... there's a certain moment of which you want to make sure you get the net underneath them. And that is not a skill that Dad has even close to mastered.
Well, it was funny because he's getting old and he's... you know, he looks like one of those, like, bottom-heavy, like... balloon clowns.
Yeah. The ones that don't they tip and come back.
Yeah. Dad's like that. The only problem is with Dad, when you tip him, he doesn't come back.
Yeah.
So there was two occasions where we were taking photos of each other's fish, and he always wanted to take photos of the fish that I gave two shits about.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's a nice small. I was like, Dad, it's like fucking 16 inches.
Yeah.
I don't care about taking a photo of a 16 inch.
Yeah.
And anyways, but he's backing up into his boat. So he's in the bottom. He's in the middle section where the console is.
Yeah.
He's backing up with his phone and he fucking just tumbles. he fell twice backing up trying to take photos. He's like, God damn it.
That's hilarious. You know, so yesterday, since I fished with him in the morning.
Yeah.
I broke one of his poles. Did he tell you about that?
He did tell me about it on the drive back.
Was he upset about it?
No.
Now, he didn't seem upset about it, but let me tell you why it was his fault.
I'm fucking calling out Dad.
So it's funny, and it's really why I didn't feel too bad about it being broke, because I was fishing at the back of the boat. If someone fishes at the back of the boat, the expectation is that another person's fishing at the front of the boat.
Right.
Right?
You're not moving to the center. You're right. Not, right.
So where Dad was sitting was a center seat. What? So he took his seat and he put it in the middle of the boat, as opposed to sitting up at the front.
But his range of casting is so much better at the front.
It doesn't make sense, right? So none of this makes sense. It was his intention to try, because I was at the back of the boat.
Yeah.
And I was casting every which way.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But he wanted to make sure his line was out the back of the boat. Well, before I came up with the brilliant idea of, like, how about we just switch? Because I'll throw anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be at the back of the boat. He casted in, and he's letting his line just kind of jig. And he started getting just a rock bass tap, right?
Yeah.
So because we're in close proximity, and because my rod setup is a cranking rod, it was 7'6". I mean, it's a long fucking pole.
Yeah, that's a big pole.
And as he is going to try to hook set, and you know how obnoxiously overplayed Dad's hook sets are.
And he immediately goes grumpy face. He's like,
yeah, it's really strange.
I could see that. But
the only thing I can equate it to is like somebody that you see on TV or whatever who's like super theatrical.
Yeah. He gets a weird lip quiver.
It's just so overdone.
Yeah.
So it's this obnoxious hook set on what is to be probably a 10-inch rock bass.
Oh, yeah.
So he does his really hard hook set. So his pole's coming back really far. As he's pulling You're back, casting. I'm casting.
Yeah.
Well, my rod it's is a fucking bigger. Monster.
Yeah.
And as soon as it hits his rod, his snaps in half. And they all get tangled up, and then untangle him, and his line's still being let out.
Oh,
so geez. The pole, the broken part of the pole,
tip's just like hanging there.
The tip of the pole goes all
down the
way,
water.
It goes way down the line. It goes all the way down the line of the water. And he goes, well, at this point, we didn't realize it's broken until he looks at it and goes, "Where's the other half of my pole?" And it just zipped on down the line, and it's in the water.
Holy shit!
And I told him, I was like, "Oh, that really sucks, but that was all your fault."
Yeah.
The fact that I was like, why are you sitting in the middle? So I went to the front of the boat and made him sit in the back. I was like, no one should be sitting in the middle. There's two of us.
Dude, me and Dave had such a chill morning.
Yeah, that's nice. Trolling for wallies.
Yeah, we caught 6 and sizable. There wasn't one under 16 inches.
Yeah, they're good eating walleye for sure.
And it was just really chill for a moment. And then there was like no hits. And we're like, what the fuck's the deal? There's like no weeds on our
right.
And so then there was this moment where we heard this beep, beep, beep on his hummingbird.
Yeah.
And I shit you not, both of us fucking landed 2 monster fucking walleyes back to back. We were reeling them in at the same time. Okay. We caught 2 walleye.
Yeah.
I was in the process of trying to get a rock bass off of one of the poles. Because we had 3 poles going.
Right.
I was in the process of getting a rock bass off one pole. Both other trolling poles basically get walleyes on them. So I dumped the rock bass back into the water while I was just dragging behind the boat. And then we had to reel
in. Yeah, you got
to
get those walleye.
Got to get those walleye.
They're most important.
That was the most chaotic part. But outside of that,
yeah, super chill trolling.
It was great.
It was pretty chill for Dad and I, too. I just kept telling him where to go. And we, you know, there's certain lines that we went down, and that was it.
But, yeah, as long as he's fished, his strategy is so irrational.
Oh, it always is.
Like, we were going out the first day before you guys recommended, why don't you just follow us, because clearly you're not going to use any fucking accessories to know where weeds and fish are.
Right. Yeah, we use the tech
to our
advantage.
Dad is sight fishing in a murky lake where he is not a pro at that lake. He doesn't, you know, like, it's not like he's been fishing there for 50 years and knows where the fish are every season.
Right.
He literally has no idea.
I fish there every year and I still don't know where.
And he fish, you know, he doesn't fish there every year, but he basically just goes, oh, that spot looks like a good spot. Let's go there.
Oh, my God. He also, too, and not that I want to turn this into a
we have to. He's old.
A dad bash fest.
He's getting
which
senile.
I'm going to call dash fest. This is another thing overplayed by Dad that just drives me nuts. He's like, well, you know what your grandpa used to say?
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
that.
I literally was like, if anything that you've ever learned in your entire life is based on what grandpa said.
About hooking him in the ass.
This is terrible. Like, you need to rethink your entire life. Yeah, he kept, so his whole idea was, well, you just keep letting them run with it, and that way you assure that they don't...
They get away.
They don't get away. You just hook them in their, deep in their belly, which kills them.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe we shouldn't be listening to the advice of Grandpa. I'm thinking maybe we just tune that out.
You're the reason fishing at St. Clair every year is getting harder and harder.
Yeah, you fucking kill everything off.
Killing all the fucking bass.
I can't tell you in 1 year how many fucking killed. It was like... No, like, and he caught a smallie yesterday and got it in the lip, and he was even surprised by it.
Dude, there were so many times where he's like, damn, that was a perfect hook, son. I was like, it's because I don't let them run with it for too long.
No, you know the appropriate time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I hear a peck, I know he's just testing it out. And then if he pecks again, I usually, like, I'm already hitting.
I think I only got one or two deep, and I was able to get both hooks out, no problem.
There was one smallie, it was a 14-incher that... literally guzzled my fucking worm.
Yeah.
It was like,
sometimes it happens.
It was just one hit and I was like, oh shit. And then
sometimes it happens, but if you're consistently killing them, it's on you.
You're waiting too long.
Yeah. I just love how he always goes back to you. Well, you know what your grandpa said? I'm like, if anything you've ever learned in life is only based upon what grandpa said, we are all like, our existence is doomed to just be awful.
there's probably just a very small few instances of wisdom that dad has provided that I'll actually carry on to my own offspring.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not, it's so funny. Yeah. He was out there saying a lot of that stuff. And I was just like, and this is the reason why you have 5 and we have 50.
Yeah.
That's the reason. I finally convinced him yesterday to throw a crankbait in and he caught a fish. I was like, oh, look at that. Oh, you could do this thing that also catches fish.
Dude,
crazy.
That giant crankbait I had fucking slaying Rockies.
Yeah, that's so strange. Yeah, it was weird.
That was the heaviest fucking
bait. It was a fun trip. It was it's tough fishing and it's been tough the last few years, but it also is like super rewarding.
It is.
And for me, there's just the amount of species I caught. Yeah, I like it.
I do too.
I mean, the fact that I can get my personal best within 15 minutes of being there, not understanding the conditions that day and all that, it was like, that was cool.
Yeah. You were set for the trip after that.
I was. It took a lot of pressure off.
Yeah.
And then I caught that other 20, which I was like, holy shit.
I'm going to be real with you.
Back to back.
There was a moment that crossed my mind where I was going to kick dad into the lake after losing that monster one.
Dude, that would have been so frustrating. So the biggest one that I caught, Dave netted as the hook was coming out of its mouth. Yeah. It popped out as the fish was dropping into like, that's the kind of net boy you need in your life.
Yeah.
You can't have a net boy missing.
When we caught a 20.
We don't miss.
We caught a 20-inch walleye, and as it was coming up, because we were switching on and off, bringing in fish when we were trolling, as I net it, he fucking bit through the line.
That happens a lot. Yeah, I saw the one where the hook was still in its mouth. Dave's like, I'll remove it when I fucking cut him up.
Yeah, but we were about to lose him, and it took a perfect net just to fucking make sure we didn't lose him.
Yeah.
Because he was biting through that line.
Yep. That's the thing. And this may be boring to a lot of people, the fact that we're sitting here
talking about fishing.
But this was, well, I'll say this, even though it was just a couple days, it was much needed because I have, not only has things just been crazy busy up until then, but then this next week I'm out the whole week and then I'm out again. Then I'm out again in Chicago and Detroit the week after. So it's like I needed just at least 3 days just to go.
Yeah.
And it was, it was worthwhile, even though it's strange because like a lot of people think that, okay, well, fishing is this like relaxing thing. And I'm here to tell you that.
We sport fish.
When I fish, in particular, when we got in there on Wednesday, we got into the lake a little bit late because there were storms passing through. I think we got out around 9:30, came in around 5. So 9:30 to 5 is a pretty full fishing day. The next day, we were out at 6:30 and Dave and I didn't get in until 8.
Yeah, we got in at 7.
So 14, almost 14 hours of fishing, and I stand up the entire time. The only time I sit is if I'm like going to eat something or we're moving across the lake. Otherwise, I'm standing the entire time. I never sit. So you have that, and then Friday, you know, fishing from 7 in the morning till about 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of...
It is an athletic activity. It might not seem like it, but it is.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's like when you're done at the end of the day, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Just got hit by a semi truck.
Yep.
Totally worth it though. Fun trip. Glad that one's in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yep. I caught some Z's when I wasn't catching.
Yeah, I know. We could tell. Yeah, you have no problem sleeping on. I can't. Oh. I look at every opportunity. Even though when the fishing gets tough, I look for every opportunity to try to catch a fish.
Yeah, I'll lounge.
Yeah, you're definitely a lounger. Dad kind of is too. He's not a lounger, but he'll get lazy.
Yeah.
And just sit and just kind of stare and eat Cheez-Its.
That he will do.
What do you want to do, boys?
Yeah, exactly.
I found this article that, from my perspective, it has some relevance to you.
Okay.
It's not over relevance to you, but it definitely has some relevance to you.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me when I was kind of just reading and catching up on the week. It reminded me of when you made that. You had the idea of like this comic book style thing about you, mm-hmm. called A Boy and His Tapeworm.
Yes.
Which is fascinating, the concept and the graphics that you'd made for it are really hilarious because it's a picture of you.
It's Ollie. Me and Ollie.
Ollie, your tapeworm, and it's coming out of your mouth and like talks to you.
Yes. Or out my ass if I'm in the toilet.
Or out your ass.
Yeah.
Which I still think is a grand idea.
I really should make it a graphic novel. I really should.
And the whole thing was there's like this, like a boy and his tapeworm. It was like you and your friend.
Right.
It's like your childhood tapeworm friend.
And my song was, imagine me and you. I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right.
Yeah, that's of course the only theme song you could have to
yes.
A Boy and His Tapeworm. Now, I thought this was interesting because I found this article about a woman and her tapeworm.
Oh, perfect.
What is crazy about this is this lady lived with a tapeworm in her body for over a year. Now, and when I say body, I don't mean in her stomach and her intestinal tract where you typically
would find.
It was in her brain. So she had a tapeworm that was literally sucking things out of her brain. The problem was doctors had misdiagnosed her symptoms for over a year. So here's what happened. She got a tapeworm in her brain. So apparently you can get tapeworms, parasitic tapeworms, in any part of your body.
That's why I'm stupid.
It's possible. What's crazy about this one was she went to the doctors after complaining about she was doing things by accident. She was forgetting things, so she had memory loss.
He was eating
and
her
she
memories.
Would like she it literally was. It's like sucking her soul.
You don't need that memory. I'm gonna eat that one.
And then she would do things like drop coffee mugs. Like impulse control.
I wonder if I bite this synapse, what happens if she's just dropping shit.
She starts drooling.
Dude, a mind control fucking tapeworm.
It's kind of what it's like. So she kept having these really bizarre symptoms, and then she would go to a doctor and they would scan her brain and no results of anything. And then she got to one doctor who said, you have a tumor in your brain, and this tumor is inevitably causing all these issues
but
that you have because it's being
fucking
restrictive. So after they got in there and started performing the surgery, the doctor realized that it's not a tumor, it's a tapeworm, which was cause for celebration in this case because it's not a cancerous tumor. It's a tapeworm of which simple antibiotics can take care of.
Yeah.
And they just removed it from her brain.
Is this in Europe?
I don't know if it was Europe or not.
Sounds like a London thing.
It sounds like it could definitely be a London thing. I agree. What's crazy was because you were just saying about like the parasite's ability to erase memories basically.
Yeah.
What it does, it's like this soul sucking parasite
right.
in her brain. She was also experiencing hallucinations, insomnia, and when she could sleep, like really horrific nightmares.
Oh my god.
So this tapeworm was literally fucking her brain up.
Dude,
isn't that wild?
That is very wild.
A goddamn tapeworm in her head. Yeah, she lived with for a year, and of course the symptoms continually got worse.
How long was it, like a foot?
I think this one was, I think it was only like less than 6 inches because it was like relatively young. Because they said like tapeworms can live in a host for over 30 years and become 800 feet long.
Yeah, they'll wind themselves up, but they'll get at least as long as your small intestine.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which is very long. It's like,
yeah, that's a long, yeah, your intestines are long.
Oh my
God. But yeah, so she had literally had this thing in her brain. Now, it's kind of crazy to me because like post surgery, she's in surgery. The doctors then realize,
oh,
hey, this is really cool. It's not a tumor, so this is good news, but it's a tapeworm. How do you break the news to someone who is passed out on an operating table and they wake up and go, hey, the good news is
we found out what the problem was.
It's not a tumor. But
yeah.
But you have a tapeworm in your brain.
She's like, what?
Yeah, what, it's crazy.
A tapeworm, like scotch tape? Like what? How did they get up there?
That's I guess I don't understand, and they still won't understand. Like they're never gonna know how it got in her brain.
You know what's gonna happen.
Right, because
don't
it had
you?
Been a year ago.
She's gonna miss them.
That's what made me kind of pick this as a topic of discussion, because you had such a close relationship mm-hmm. with your tapeworm.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, this one was in her brain. The brain was hosting the tapeworm. Tell me there's not a connection that has been made between tapeworm and host.
Could you imagine having a shared consciousness with a being that is literally just,
I mean, if you look at a tapeworm, it looks like a worm that looks like tape.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a very literal
thing.
It
looks like a linguine noodle.
Yeah, it does. It's so strange.
But
it's kind of thin. And
yeah, it's very thin. Oh my God. Could you imagine sharing memories with the tapeworm?
What I was thinking was, could it be more something like where the tapeworm could take control of her body? Meaning that you have this...
What's a parasite?
You have a parasite that is now controlling thoughts,
and
controlling memories.
There are parasites that do inject eggs into bugs and stuff in like South America. And the way it works is when the babies hatch inside the bodies of these hosts, they start eating at the brain, and they basically can turn the... They're worms. They're worms. And they can basically take over the brain of the host and then take them to water where they basically kill them, and then the worm escapes through the body in order to basically continue the cycle of reproduction.
That's crazy.
And they basically turn fucking insects into zombies.
That's so crazy.
And they're worms. It's fucking crazy shit.
That's pretty intense.
But imagine that with a tapeworm.
I feel like that's what the tapeworm was doing with this obnoxiously ugly lady.
Oh, she's ugly?
Yeah, she's ugly. Yeah. She's a foul-looking lady. But listen, if you're a tapeworm, isn't that kind of what you want to go after?
Like, I just imagine, what did you snort raw meat?
That's what I don't understand. I guess how it got into the brain is what I don't...
What'd you stick up your nose?
Because typically that's what a tapeworm comes from, right? It comes from... undercooked or raw,
typically.
So that would be through ingestion. So like, how the fuck does it get in your brain?
Oh shit.
But it did, and she lived with it for a year with all these crazy symptoms, thinking it was a tumor. And then someone has to tell her, it's not a tumor, it's you literally have this giant long noodle
in your brain
sucking your thoughts, your memories. It's creating
and replacing them with his own.
No impulse control at all. Like, she would start shaking and shit. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. So there's certain things that are happening.
That's basically the worm just fucking jerking the steering wheel.
It for sure.
Let's
is.
see what happens when I jerk the steering wheel.
That's exactly what happened. I thought it was pretty fucking
crazy.
That's
wild, dude.
It's pretty intense, the fact that, like,
now me and Ollie, we get along, so we're good. It's very symbiotic.
My thought is if you're going to have a tapeworm, you better be friends with it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to turn on you.
Yeah.
You guys want to cohabitate.
Yeah.
This whole idea of having a tapeworm as a pet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Is that time?
It's that time. We have a review. Going to take a quick break. But we have a good review coming up. And this is the first time we've ever reviewed this particular brand of cigars on the podcast.
Yeah, man.
Think about it. Kind of crazy. Which is really, when you think about it, a long time coming.
Yeah. Everybody's like, when are you going to do this brand? When? Yeah. And we're like,
we've just held
sometime.
On. Yeah. Get off our shit. We can only record so much.
There's only one episode a week.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll be back at you guys in just a minute with a brand new brand of cigar that we have never broken down before. So hang tight. All right, And we're back.
Yeah.
We're back with a surprise. Not even really a surprise.
Yeah.
And actually, as I mentioned before, kind of a long time coming in terms of a cigar or a brand of cigars. I don't even say this particular cigar, just the brand of cigars that we've just never reviewed on the podcast, which
Smoked them. Super strange.
Smoked them and actually have become quite accustomed to smoking them. I used to be turned off.
Well, you're turned off by the price.
I'm turned off by not even the price. The inflation around the cigar itself in certain areas.
Vegas,
in particular. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Davidoff cigars. Yeah. We smoked the late hour Davidoff Churchill. Now, what turns me off about the brand, or what had turned me off about the brand initially, was, you know, smoked cigars for a long time. This was back when a period I was just smoking pretty casually. I smoked often, but it wasn't like, I wasn't like really balls deep into
the whole experience. 2 or 3 a year.
Me. Oh, Davidoff?
Yeah.
Yeah. At this particular time, I was in Vegas. I was with customers, I was with friends, whatever, and went to one of the Davidoff stands, bought a bunch of Davidoff cigars, which, of course, were heavily inflated in Vegas, roughly $40-something dollars a piece.
Ugh.
At the time, didn't really appreciate the nuances and flavor as much, especially on a cigar, you know, a Davidoff cigar.
It smelled good, though.
So it was like one of those things where, for me at the time, I was like, well, this is ridiculous to spend this much on a cigar that just simply isn't worth it. Now, fast forward, shit, what was that?
3 years ago.
No, it was like 8 years ago. No. It was a long time. It was at least 8 years ago. Fast forward 8 years, I appreciate Davidoff cigars a lot more. And actually, I have a lot of preference towards the brand specifically because of the flavors. Like the Davidoff Nicaragua is one of my favorite cigars. The Colorado is really delicious.
Here's where I'm the same way. The price point is one thing. I'll buy an expensive cigar just to see if it's even worth it, because in all reality, most cigars aren't.
Right.
Because cigars can only be so good. Does that make sense? Like, there's a ceiling.
Right.
I feel like there's a ceiling to it.
Right.
And it can only be so good.
And there's a point of which you're paying, then you're paying for the brand.
Right. So, in that regard, the pricing is one thing, obviously, but I'm willing to try it out.
Try it out.
Piss on me, beat me, try it out. But then there's the other part, which is the personification of the brand, which was a turnoff for me.
Right.
Because I couldn't relate.
Yeah, so Davidoff is one of the more prestigious names.
Yeah.
It does have, I mean, it's associated with pretentiousness, in my opinion. If we were to break down every single brand of cigars, Davidoff is one where it's expensive watches, it's expensive alcohol, it's, you know, chilling on a yacht. Like, that's the kind of, that's where you'll see Davidoff smattered in, if you're not an aficionado, a bunch of pictures of folks who...
They're the Apple of the cigar industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the way things are merchandised.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That's actually a really... I mean, that's a good reference for it, because they are. I mean, you have to abide by their rules as far as humidor setups, right? Those big, beautiful white humidors that look like they just don't
all lit up.
They don't look like they fit in every B&M, which, by the way, so... Another brand that's a part of the Davidoff brand is Camacho. They do the same thing. They have merchandising shelves for the Camacho brand. So they do stuff differently in terms of brand recognition and merchandising and all that. And I think that's, you know, you're paying for, I'm not saying you're not paying for a good cigar if you're paying for a Davidoff, but you're also paying for the brand. It would be really frustrating if you're paying for a brand that had subpar cigars, but
right.
That really isn't Davidoff. I've become accustomed to smoking their cigars pretty frequently, because I think everybody understands if you're someone who really enjoys their cigars and you smoke them frequently, like, you know, Davidoff cigars are super aromatic and they come with flavors that just you don't really get in any other cigars. That there is a uniqueness to pretty much every single one of the cigars I've had in their lineup.
Yeah, they're pretty distinguished, all of them.
Yeah. So we ended up smoking and reviewing the Davidoff Winston Churchill late hour. Mm-hmm. And we smoked it, ironically, in the Churchill.
In the late hour.
So we smoked the Churchill.
Yeah.
The Davidoff Winston Churchill. We smoked the Churchill Late hour. Yeah. Smoked it late.
Yeah.
So it's all coming together. I will start off by saying, before we actually get into like breaking everything down,
yeah,
one of the things that I really like about this cigar, just to note, and we've talked about bands and labels, I think we talk about it every mm-hmm. cigar. I love the contrast in gold on this cigar.
I do too with the black.
Because it's technically an Oscuro wrapper, so it is darker in appearance, but it's got this, the black with the gold. It's like,
it's pretty.
Dude, appearance-wise, does it get better than that?
It looks very classy.
It's very classy. And usually I don't really like that look a whole lot, but it's simplistic and really classy.
Yeah, it's very classy.
Which I dig. But also, you know, if you're Davidoff, get a new logo. the old man with the fucking hat is just, and I get it, but get a new logo for the Winston Churchill late hour Busto in particular.
Oh yeah, well,
get a new logo.
Yeah, no, to each their own.
No, actually, I really enjoyed it. I think it's cool as shit. And it's one. Is there like a better? So like the Davit, especially like the Winston. So you look at the Winston Churchill one, and obviously it's the Winston Churchill kind of sitting to the side with the cigar out of the mouth, so it looks more like a silhouetted type thing. It is so, like, if you ever seen those brand breakdowns where it's like they remove the name of the brand and just like show the, like, you know, logos, right? Like, you understand the brand recognition. It's no different in Davidoff. Like, when you see it, you know what it is. Like, you're not going, wait, who's that? Like, you just fucking, even if you're not an aficionado, you know.
You've heard the name.
Yeah, it's which they've obviously done an incredible job with the brand overall. But with that, I think it's time that we actually get into this thing. Chris, how do we break these bitches down?
Brother, it's the late hour and it's time to just do this. Because each cigar review is based on our 6-point rating scale and broken down into 3 main categories.
Amen.
Construction, burn, and taste.
Hallelujah.
We then see if the cigar is worth the price for possible bonus or penalty points. Ooh. We then finally average out our individual scores, giving you guys our total cigar rating out of 6.
That was beautiful.
Had a little bit of a Southern charismatic
like
draw.
Like a Southern gospel Baptist kind of thing.
Which is probably not Davidoff, but I went super Alabama with it.
Yeah, I like
it. Or Louisiana.
Yeah.
I'm a plantation owner. No, that's not good.
I'm sorry, what?
It's not good. Yeah. Plantation meaning plants.
Yeah. We'll keep it at that. Yeah. So what are we breaking
just
down?
Let's look at just the components. Just a preface, I'm not racist.
Yeah. Well, it'd have been better if you just didn't say anything at all. And we could just erase that from, because I could just cut out what you said.
Sometimes I black out.
And just paste something else in there.
Sometimes it just fly out my face.
Yeah. It happens. We all make mistakes. I've made them.
It's the late hour.
Trust me. It's the late hour. Anything goes.
I'm a little loopy.
So what is this cigar comprised of, Chris?
Well, this Davidoff is actually comprised of an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. Mm-hmm.
Yum, yum.
Binder, Mexican and Ecuadorian. I'm assuming Mexican San Andreas, but I'm just going to say Mexican for the safety of this review. And the fillers are Nicaraguan, and we did have it in the Winston Churchill 7x48 size. And this cigar comes at a price point of roughly around 19, 20 bucks or roonies.
Yeah, so the fillers actually, so there's multiple fillers. So there's Nicaraguan and Dominican fillers, and there's different parts of the plant in particular. Yeah. One of the things that I want to note before we actually get into the breakdown itself is that listed in the components, and also one of the things that is, I would say, creatively different about this cigar than most Davidoff cigars is that a component of the filler is actually barrel aged. What's interesting about this is that, do you remember when Camacho came out with the barrel-aged cigar?
Yes.
So it's like the whole thing around being, okay, now we have this barrel-aged cigar.
And the rum-aged one, they had that too.
So they have some of that too. So this is similar in terms of they use a component, one of the Nicaraguan fillers, which is Viso. They actually age it in Scotch barrels for 6 months. Now, the idea is that there's going to be some sort of flavor impact around aging something. It's no different than why we age certain bourbons in barrels, why you age whiskey in barrels, why you have things like smoked barrels. So there's all these different things that barrel aging is supposed to do from the flavor component of the cigar. No different or in like bourbons, whiskeys, and so on, wines, now doing this in this particular cigar. So I wanted to make note of that because I think that does something interesting to the flavors, which I will discuss when we actually get into the flavor breakdown of the cigar. But that being said, they actually specifically call out, okay, so this is, it's this particular Nicaraguan leaf, another Nicaraguan leaf, and Dominican tobaccos in there, all from different parts of the plant, Viso and Seco specifically. And then, of course, you have the Ecuadorian Habano Oscuro wrapper. Mm-hmm. Beautiful wrapper, by the
way.
Very
beautiful.
It looks incredible. So, let's get into the construction of the cigar overall.
Well, I gotta say, the skin complexion of this cigar is fucking flawless. Like, supermodel level skin complexion. Do you feel me on that?
I do, actually. Yeah, I do. And I actually made note specifically about what the cigar actually, from an appearance perspective, looked like.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, agreed.
Dark skin, just perfect, dark, flawless
just
skin.
Just a dark skin honey.
Not a zit on her.
No, definitely not.
Not even a blemish.
Great complexion.
Not even a scar.
Mm-mm.
Perfect.
Acne was not a problem during childhood.
Like, she was made in a lab.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's no way you came out of a vagina. You came out of a test tube.
Yeah.
You were made for perfection.
100%.
But that said, very firm cigar, great oily wrapper. I do really like that Oscuro.
Yeah, one of the things where I anticipated on this wrapper was it was going to be a fairly oily wrapper. I haven't had these for a long time, and it was. I mean, one of those ones that it's very noticeable when just from an appearance perspective. Yeah. And of course, you get the film on your fingers when you're handling it. I agree in terms of it's relatively flawless. I love the construction of the cigar. I love the appearance of it. I thought it was pretty much great all the way around.
No flaws.
I didn't have any anticipated flaws either. So doing the once over, no soft spots or anything like
that.
No
varicose veins. No.
Which I would expect if you're paying, $20 for a cigar,
it better be fucking flawless. Yeah.
Yeah, it better be flawless. I mean, you're paying for this. There is a value component here.
Yeah. She's an expensive date, but you want to show her off.
Yeah.
You know.
She's tall, too.
She's very tall.
Long legs.
I would imagine if Winston Churchill had a girlfriend on the side.
She'd be tall as fuck.
It'd be this girl.
Yeah.
Dark skin. It's like, yeah, you got that frumpy old woman that you sleep next to at night. But before you come back home, this is the girl you're seeing.
Yeah, who's the girl out you're trying to bang it out with?
And she's like, Winston, I'm feeling frisky. Not tonight, honey. Because you already banged.
Yeah, you already banged.
You were with the hottie.
What did you think about the burn overall?
I mean, the burn. You know, I had a little bit of inconsistencies, a little bit here in the beginning, but otherwise, it was a very even burn. One of the most fantastic, probably smoke production cigars I've had. It's up there with the elites.
Yeah.
And that said, being a Churchill, being a 7x48, I mean, it's one of those perfect ring gauges. It's a good length. I honestly had no issues with burn whatsoever. Yeah. And you know, 50% mark, 3.5 inches into this baby. Right. I'm like, it's time for that hold test. I'll set this down for 5 minutes. Put it back in my mouth.
No
like
issues,
bombs
huh?
going off in London.
Nice.
Just smoke everywhere.
Good reference.
That was really dark.
Yeah, great reference. Well, it is a late hour.
It was a late hour.
I always use the construction as my baseline to anticipate anything that's going to happen with the burn of the cigar.
Sure.
I was hoping this one would show its cards, and it didn't. What had happened was I had many consistent burn issues with the cigar. Not only did I have it challenges with it running.
There's a lot of people running at that time.
There's definitely a ton of people
late
running.
Late hour.
Late hour, always running. The other thing that I had a challenge with too is just unanticipated pitting in the cigar.
Well, when shit crumbles and falls.
I would say the bombs are hitting around buildings and creating.
You're pinned underneath the rubble.
Yeah, so I had issues and challenges with pitting twice. Which really sucks. That's not something
on that ring gauge.
So I would anticipate that. And here's the part that's challenging for me is that, not that it's an excuse, but if you have something that's 7 inches long in terms of a cigar, it's likely going to happen. That I would say there's a higher probability that you're going to have some sort of pit issue in the cigar, right? Just from That's not fair. Being able to bunch fillers consistently. But having multiple, especially in a $20 cigar, is kind of disappointing to me. The other thing is that because of that challenge, did not pass the whole test. Wasn't even close. Like I anticipated sucks. After going through it that probably in minute 2.5 or 3, mm-hmm. it is just completely went out. So it failed the burn test horribly. Now, if there's any sort of redemption at all in terms of scoring the burn, it's in the draw.
The draw was really
fucking
good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
At least that was redeeming.
Yeah.
Because it was super full. I actually made mention in here, which I really liked. At first, when I was drawing on the cigar, I was like, this is too airy and open, but it brings so much smoke that it just didn't matter.
Yeah.
It was a little looser than I would like in terms of the draw, but it was so fucking full.
It was very full.
I was like, I can't be disappointed in this at all. This is great smoke production, and it was beautiful draw. Beautiful. Yeah.
So I just had weird runs. That's all I had.
Yeah.
It just, you know, like it just, there'd be moments where it would just, it looked even, and then it would just take a deep dive, like a heart rate monitor.
Like, yeah.
It would just do
that.
I
had that too at first. Until I got to the first pit. And now, ironically enough, you may start making those corrections, especially when you have a deep pit in the cigar where it abruptly goes out.
Yeah.
You make that correction. Well, then you no longer have the run, right? So right. I think I had so many challenges with the pitting that there's no other. I mean, I couldn't have any other challenges.
You were in the part of London running. That didn't survive.
No. Yep. Bombs away. It just was not great. I just so many challenges, and it's a $20 cigar that you're probably going to smoke for 2.5 hours, roughly, which is about what I smoked
it
at.
It's a pretty long smoke.
It's a pretty long smoke. I don't know. To me, it's disappointing that, especially because it's a Davidoff and I'm looking forward to the flavors of the cigar.
Yeah.
Having those kind of challenges that disrupt kind of a good ongoing experience, it just sucks.
Yeah.
It's worth mentioning and pointing out.
It is.
Now, what about the flavors? So I mentioned earlier that there's a component to this being barrel aged. Scotch Bright barrel. the fact that one of the components of Nicaraguan fillers is aged in a Scotch barrel for 6 months. And what could that potentially do to the flavor of the cigar? I'll allow you to begin, and you tell me exactly what you thought of the cigar. And I want you to make it relative, if you could, to other Davidoff cigars that you've had.
Okay. One of the most definitive distinctions on this cigar that I against any other cigar and even some other Davidoffs is the smell is very unique.
Mm-hmm.
Like very unique. When it burns, it has this weird, I don't know how to describe it, like a, I mean, aromatic, yeah. But it had this just, I don't know, skunkiness? I don't know if that's the right word. I'm trying to think of the right word to describe it. But that said, it had a very unique smell, which really oddly played really well with the flavors at the lips. I've had Davidoffs that are sweet, kind of bitter undertones. This one is like meaty, in my opinion. It has a very savoriness to it. And it's almost like I'm having a dinner. If that makes sense. Like I'm having a steak with a scotch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a full package meal. Smells
That's interesting.
Smells wonderful. But you do get savory kind of meatiness out of it, and it does have some bitterness along with it. But outside of that, I mean, unless I'm not picking up what you're putting down, which is possible, I just thought it was a very unique smelling cigar.
Yeah.
And it was one of these ones where it wasn't overly bold. I mean, it's kind of from a Davidoff line, it's probably a little bit up there, but as far as strength. But I really, really enjoyed retrohaling this one.
Yeah.
Getting that cold draw and then fucking just
at the
nostrils. I fucking loved it.
Yeah. So, no, you actually, the way that you specifically mentioned it being pretty aromatic, I had a hard time too at a little bit of challenge kind of figuring out what it is, but I said intensely floral. So that's what kind of brought to my attention. Not so there's always this weird florally aromatic component to most Davidoff cigars.
I get a sweet smell usually sometimes.
This one seemed to be more robust. It seemed to be like if you were smoking the Nicaraguan, this seemed to be like times five, where it was actually really enjoyable for me. That's something that I actually really appreciate about Davidoff cigars as a whole, is that they are very, it plays on the senses really well.
Yeah, it does.
It's one thing that I really very much enjoy about their cigars. I thought this one was weird, and I anticipated that it was going to be more robust than most Davidoff cigars I have, and I was correct in my assumption. You'd mentioned that as well, that it just, it had more to it.
Yes.
I guess what I didn't like, or maybe it just caught me off guard, was it was a bit peppery in the beginning for me.
It was bolder than most fucking...
Yeah, it comes on with a little bit more punch and a little bit more kick than what I'm used to in a Davidoff cigar, but not uncommon for a lot of other cigars that I had. It was just for a Davidoff, it was a unique experience from the beginning. It balances out really quick, which I love.
Yeah.
What I found challenging about the flavors is that I think a lot of times Davidoff cigars, everything blended together meshes so well that despite being very complex, all the components work really well together. I didn't get that in this cigar, and I can't figure out whether it's not this barrel-aged component, whether there's just too much going on. So you have a hodgepodge of Nicaraguan and Dominican fillers. I couldn't figure out what it was, but it just wasn't as pleasing as what I'm used to in a Davidoff cigar. I just didn't get what I wanted out of it that I typically would get otherwise from something else in their lineup.
Did you have it on a fresh palate?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What was so bizarre about this one, and I think it's kind of a positive, but there is so much going on with it, in my opinion. It does feel like a full course dinner with fucking dessert afterwards.
Yeah.
Like you almost can't have it with anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think to me, I guess what I could relate the smoking experience to in terms of flavor was, it's almost like it was smoking hot the whole time, but it wasn't. You know that flavor that you get just as starts to begin to charge during like the last maybe inch or two that you have on the cigar? Things really start to heat up. There's more of a charring kind of... And that's what I'm like, is this that part of that barrel age process that it's a flavor, a nuance in flavor that I've not yet experienced and don't understand?
Yeah.
Or is it just the flavor complexity is just not well balanced? There's a lot thrown in here, but really from a flavor perspective, does everything just kind of get piled together and not one really good thing is able to come out of it? It just seemed like, here's a pot, let's throw a bunch of shit in it and see if we can get something good out of it. And it just wasn't good to me. I just didn't, even in terms of other cigars that I've had recently that let's not compare them to Davidoff, I was just like, it's very so-so.
Yeah, I did like it in a weird sense. I think I liked how weird it was. I think that's what I was drawn to.
Yeah.
Because I'm a weird guy. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But
there's no doubt about
maybe
that.
We're overthinking it. I don't know.
I don't think we're overthinking it. I just think it's one of those cigars that it's like one tweak away from being phenomenal.
But you it's can't not put exactly you, but you there. Can't put your finger on what, is, yeah, what it's the like, culprit
it's,
is.
It's strange to me. It's like it has everything there, but it's just not able to, it just didn't all come together. The game plan was great. You wrote up a good game plan. You just weren't able to execute it.
Well, you know, shit happens. When Winston Churchill was sitting in his office and the bombs were falling upon London at night, what do you think Winston Churchill did?
It's probably smoking.
Dab it off.
Dab it off.
Dab it off.
That's hilarious.
And I think you should do the same. Yeah, he probably was. Should do the same. When you're sitting here thinking, like, I don't know. I mean, is this a good cigar? Don't beat yourself up over if you don't like it. Just dab it off.
I love it. So I guess now, given given what we've discussed, we always play and add in a pricing component to this variable. And I think the pricing component piece of what we do here becomes more challenging as the price increases on the cigar.
Yes, it does.
Because the whole term of worth it, all things considered, is one of those, like, you almost have to redefine it.
Yeah.
So for you, what did you give it?
Definitively overpriced.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's hard not to say it was overpriced. I didn't say it was overpriced. Here's why. I'm doing what you did in the last one because of the branding and because it's a Davidoff.
Yeah.
And because it has a lot of these unique characteristics, even though it didn't hit the mark for me necessarily in terms of flavor.
Yeah.
Or all the other things, I didn't give it a delta.
Do you know what?
Because it is one of the lesser expensive cigars
in their lineup. Sure.
The Davidoff lineup.
There's 30s and 50s. Here's what I'll say though. In comparison to an over the holistic view of the entire cigar community,
right,
and these wonderful cigars that these brands make and offer us at various price points, if I had to try to find an average baseline for them to go on for this cigar, not all their other ones, the other ones might be worth 50, they might be worth 30,
right,
but this one in particular, if I had to compare it based on the experience I had of the construction, which was amazing, the burn, which had a little bit of issues, but was amazing on the draw, and for me, the whole test, and the flavor, which had a certain quirkiness that I enjoyed.
Right.
It's like a $13 cigar.
Yeah. I would agree with that, but you just know Davidoff will never put out a 13 cigar.
I get that.
So it's almost like, it's like if you're Davidoff, now there's this expectation set of, man, the what we are trying to match in price in terms of like experience and overall, it better be there, because it's not, you put it in a sub brand, don't call it a Davidoff.
And I think that's the reason I only smoke like two or three a year.
Yeah, sure.
Because if they were 10 to 13, I'd be like smoking more frequently.
Oh yeah, you'd be smoking them all the time. So yeah, there is an expectation of not only quality, but you're smoking the Davidoff because of the experience that you want to get out of it. But there also is the brand piece of it as well.
Yeah.
That we have to take into consideration, which is where I am coming from in terms of,
if you really want it and spend the $30, go for it. If not, Davidoff.
Yeah. Davidoff. So you gave it a pricing delta.
Yeah.
I left it as is. So overall, what does that give us in a final score? What did your score ended up being?
I still did enjoy it, even with a pricing, negative pricing. But that said, I came out at 5.44, which is a 90.7%.
Interesting. I came in at a 5.28 with no pricing delta. Split the difference in the average. What was your score again? Mine was a 5.28.
Yours was 5.44.
Which gives us an average score of 5.36, which overall is about an 89%.
Yeah.
I think that's fair for this cigar.
I do. And this
is because there's better cigars and there's better Davidoff cigars.
There's better Davidoffs for sure.
Yeah. I do like, and interestingly enough, I like the Vitola that we smoked on this cigar, though. I don't know that it would be any better in a smaller Vitola.
Yeah.
But there's something about, especially because there's a reason why that Vitola is called the Churchill. This cigar is the Davidoff Churchill Late Hour, and smoking it in a Churchill, it's like, I would almost only make this cigar in a Churchill. I think that would have been cool. I think making it into other Vitolas was a mistake. Even though the cigar was not as, from a flavor perspective, not as fruitful for me as I'd want.
Yeah.
I do like the symbolism between, you know, the Churchill piece of it actually being a traditional Churchill size. And then, of course, it's called the Churchill Late Hour.
Maybe just a couple tweaks and probably the blend is, but everything else is amazing. But just maybe a couple tweaks in the blend.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Davidoff kills it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, anything outside of this. And this is coming from someone who was pretty turned off by Davidoff for a very long time.
So take this moment where the smoke still needs to settle and the sirens are finally subsiding as we make our way into the morning and the sun peeks through the clouds and fire and smoke. Just know, Davidoff,
we will fight again.
You can redeem yourselves. You're not out.
Yeah.
Don't treat this as a loss. You know?
Definitely not. Don't feel defeated by our review.
Regroup. Persevere. Get ready and fight through it.
The Royal Army's coming.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Yeah. Go get
it. In this late hour.
Should have written up a speech for this whole thing.
I should.
I was actually so very tickled the fact that we finally got the first Davidoff review underway. Mm. So that was really cool for us, I think.
Yeah.
Next week, I believe. Is it next week? I don't even know what we're going to do for a podcast next week. I'm gone pretty much the whole week. I get back like 1 a.m. Friday or Saturday morning. Yeah. So we'll have to figure that out. But then we'll have an interview the week after, which is going to be really fun.
That's going to be a fun one.
We have some good things lined up in the coming weeks. So it's all good, exciting stuff. And thank you for everybody who's visited and joined our newsletter on hotticketweekly.com.
Quite a significant bunch.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. The traffic and everything has been awesome. We have some reviews that we're going to be releasing here coming up, which we'll post on social media once they're out. So far it seems like everything's going as planned.
And you could tune in there to the show.
Yeah, that's the great pod.
There's a whole bunch of other exclusive content that you can't get.
Yeah, the podcast is embedded. And then for each podcast that we review, we have a summarized written review for those of you who have short attention spans like myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quick written review for every single review that we do, that we do a comprehensive breakdown on the podcast. We summarize with a written review.
Yeah.
So that way we've got some digestible content and material for you in case you don't want to listen to an hour show.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom. It's right then and there. It's all in one place. HotTicketWeekly.com.
Hot Ticket Weekly.
By the time this episode airs, our giveaway will be done and we will be announcing the winner. The giveaway will be done actually in T-minus about 12 hours. So.
And can we say that the value of this giveaway exceeds all? It exceeds all I've ever seen. It's nearly $1 million worth of value. Yep. It is crazy good.
There are Caribbean pirate gold coins.
Yes.
Also sprinkled and smattered in with the giveaway package.
Not verified, but we're pretty sure they're real.
Yeah. I bit into them to make sure they weren't chocolate, and they weren't.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And had they been, would have still been pretty rewarding.
Yeah.
Either way.
And we have a 1777 Colonel wooden desk used during the signing of our independence.
Mm-hmm. We sure do.
It's fucking crazy.
We also have the shoelace of a boot off of an American slave trader.
Yeah.
So we've got his shoelace.
That's haunted, by the way.
Yeah. Haunted shoelace. It was actually used to murder his whole family.
Yeah, and they called him Shoelace Jim. And basically, he would sneak into your room and kill you with his shoelaces.
Yep. We have one of his shoelaces. Still haven't been able to find the other.
No, but I did have some weird fucking dreams. When you gave me that boot, just like, hey, just been the shoelaces. Just like, hey, keep this in your room for now. I had some wacky dreams, dude. I thought some guy was fucking standing over my fucking bed.
Mm. Shoelace Jim. He was.
Shoelace Jim.
Yeah. Apparition of Shoelace Jim. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the podcast. This is episode 103.
Yeah.
And we'll be back at you next week with episode 104. See everyone.
See ya.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. We greatly appreciate it. How can you get a hold of us? You can get a hold of myself on Instagram at the Hot Ticket Pod. You can get a hold of Chris on Instagram at Hot Ticket Chris. Please also, if you could, visit our website, hotticketweekly.com, for news, reviews, interviews, and more. And please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. In addition to being on iTunes, we're also on Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Podomatic, anywhere where you can find podcasts. Again, thank you for listening to the show. We'll be back at you next week.